I'm America Castillo, y soy la chismosa del Valle, a first-generation DACA recipient with just enough journalism training to make me sound legit. Here, I want to have honest conversations and make it a space to learn and connect about everything from culture and entertainment to tech and politics. So let's just start talking. Before you guys listen to my brown woman tears, I do want to apologize to another creator that got kind of involved in this storyline, because one, that was absolutely never my intention, and I just feel like I don't want to completely blame fully the other creator as well, but I do want to say that I hope that if you're listening, you understand how our fight that honestly could have been avoided if your girlfriend just left me alone put somebody else's life in danger as well. And I'm able to recognize my privilege. I don't know if you are, but I'm able to recognize mine. Okay? And as much as I was always going to apologize, you know? And if it felt like I wasn't going to, and or that I wasn't going to do it directly or whatever, the thing is, I didn't even want to be petty. That's the thing. It's more like they also said something, and I was like, okay, I feel like now we're losing the plot on accountability, you know? But then at the end, I was like, that's not me, you know? And I wasn't gonna be petty just to prove a point. So, yeah, I am really sorry. It may not matter to you, but it does matter to me, okay? You know, when they say, Conamaker, why do you like Hamilton so much? It's because I think Lin-Manuel did a great job by not casting anybody white except for the king for the cast of Hamilton, because it just represents how the hood is. We're all fighting, and the white man at the top is laughing. But yeah, real quick, only because I'm just kind of recording this really quick, because I do in this next quick recording say ICE came before 9/11. I just really, really, I'm not gonna re-record all of that, but really, really quickly want to say that ICE came after 9/11, and then INS was before 9/11. So Immigration and Naturalization Services, that's what INS stands for. And really quick, I did try to get a confirmation from her, and even invited her to talk about this, to see how regulations of, you know, tech are, and everything going on social media with consumerism and surveillance and, you know, data collection, but she blocked me. I thought that maybe she worked at Google, only because, you know, you can't bring back secrets. That, and also there was like one situation where I was like, okay, either it's just by coincidence we're in the same area and you filmed the exact same location that I was filming, or like that was weird. But then I thought, oh wait, you know who else has location services now and all that fun stuff? Meta. And really the only reason I was starting to assume that it was Meta, that she worked for Meta, was because the week of my crash out online, my mom wanted to order pizza, so she actually sent me a Facebook link with an ad for Domino's. I love Domino's. It's actually one of the reasons I'm in this country. My grandpa promised me a lot of Domino's. That didn't actually happen. We didn't have the money. Anyways, and yeah, so my grandpa was actually my grandpa was he's in town, so we ordered some Domino's and we were eating it. And then yeah, I went on my little crash out, and then one of her last videos before she blocked me was her eating pizza. you know, talking about how she doesn't want her boyfriend to see her win. And I don't know. I was like, okay, so it was meta? And I don't know. I asked her. She wanted to come in. I asked her for a quote. She declined. Yeah, so I couldn't really confirm whether she worked there, but I don't know if the blocking counts as a confirmation. Just sponsor that boy already so he can scooter his girlfriend around. And any future husband of mine better have a nice fancy car waiting for me outside the club. Okay? Not scootering me around. But you know what? Good luck, babe. Him building you a vanity is the bare minimum. Also, I hope that I am the talent in my next relationship and not the manager, because I'm tired. And as for the girl going to therapy, thank you for confirming my suspicion. And I hope you guys know what I mean by saying girl going to therapy. Like, you guys are understanding what account I'm talking about, right? Yeah, thanks for confirming my suspicion. And yeah, thanks for becoming one of the tech bros and just collecting data and using it for not good of the people who follow you or maybe one day wanted to go to your events. Okay, but at least now I know. And I don't know if you're just sending in your best or word got around town, but if you're trying to send people to spy on me on my account, you're lame. I'm already that bitch, so get the fuck away from me. And I don't know. I have no problem going to court or whatever. Like, you're annoying. And therapy is not cute. You should know that a mentally unstable girl is not cute. Now, I'm not saying I'm doing anything. I'm just saying I'm over this and I have no problem going to court. Whatever it takes to get the truth out of all of you, I'll do it. I'll go to court. Guys, $5, you rebrands or like changes the name or something, or like, she'll be fine. She doesn't really need me. And she also doesn't have to worry about me either, because she probably has more money. She probably already comes from money. And, well, she already has the connections. And, yeah, she doesn't really need me. So, you do you, boo. Okay? But keep trying to steal my data, spy on me, or honestly, just copy off my work. I'll see you in court. And please, think of me every time you wear a brown outfit, a brown suit, okay? Oh, and that corporate group chat, you're not any better either, okay? Oh, if I want to, you know, post a TikTok of my grandfather eating pozole, I don't want to go into a group chat and see a form that has a name that is very, very similar to my video and everything after I cut ties with somebody in your group chat because they were also going to sell us out to the tech companies. So yeah, I left corporate for a fucking reason. So maybe someone at Google was really messing with me, huh? And you were supposed to be for Latinos. But also, I'm just not surprised because I get it. Tech is supposed to be helpful, but you guys are not helping us. A lot of you guys have been the problem, actually. And now I know that a lot of Latinos are working in tech and selling us out and not actively talking about how these issues affect us. So thank you. Thank you for that. Now I don't trust any of you. You don't care about our people. You're just happy that a white person saw something in you and like you feel like you belong in corporate now. So like you feel the need to turn everything into that. Listen, as someone who's starting her own business right now, I get it. I'm in between all of that stuff. But now I know that a lot of you were just going to do what the white man does. So I will be very careful about who I buy my house from with. Don't worry. I saw The Big Short. In fact, I got to live in a blue house with a white picket fence, just like the American dream, you know, the way it was promised to us. except we really couldn't really afford it, which is why we had a bunch of other Latinos renting in that house. And then we all almost lost it during the 2008 housing crisis. So yeah, if I'm a little skeptical with realtors, investors, there's a reason, but at least now I know to keep my eye out for the next Zillow. Because I know who will probably be involved in it. I don't know, dude. Maybe next time come to me with some research strategies on how you were planning on using me for your investments. And shout out to La Virgencita because we got to keep our house because of her, and it's one of the reasons my stepdad found Jesus again. It sucks because it really is your own people who take advantage of those who don't have a status. All right. My heart is beating really, really fast. You know, it's really, really hard to do your job when your boss is constantly looking over your shoulder. Makes me feel like I'm living in a authoritarian dictatorship kind of world, which I thought that was not us. So I don't know what to do or say, because I just feel like I'm not, I wasn't crazy. And I had been trying to tell everybody this. And the thing is, we all know. We all know you're about your data and how it's being used. But it seems like nobody actually cares to do anything about it. You guys are just okay with it, and I can't do much about that, I guess, because every time I do try, I'm the one that gets locked up. You know, I didn't see at the meeting about how white supremacy works and where it hides. Yeah, some of your favorite Seattle content creators who claim to care about our community, specifically the undocumented community. They even put on a little event to raise money. I believe they claimed 80% was going to go to Wisen organization and the rest would go to the DJ and a person helping him out. Damn. You can do that, but you cannot read up on why you should bring your flag to the protest, huh? And why it's really, really important for our community. This is why nobody trusts organizations, especially people in my community. This is exactly why we don't trust them. I rarely use them. Every time I need money, there's no funding or there's a wait list. You care so much, and yet him and his little girlfriend and content creator friends go and then purposely try to push the girl who's already at her limits. Honestly, it's people like him and his girlfriend in tech who are the problem. You know, once I blocked him, I was just going to move on. But then I got a little video and I was like, huh, that's interesting. But see, the difference between them and me is that, well, I actually have a journalism degree. So if I start lurking, it's okay. It's investigative journalism. When they do it, it's a form of cyberbullying. That's really funny because growing up, I actually remember when all of this was starting to, girls used to fight, like physical fight. Yeah, I used to see that on reality TV shows too. I mean, I guess it's a good thing that we got rid of that, right? Like the whole physical fighting, because I mean, as adults, is it worth going to jail for an assault? No. Yeah, but we didn't fix anything because now that just went on to cyberbullying. Yeah, that's gonna affect the kids too. And I'm sure that if you're young, you probably already experienced it. I mean, I'm 30, so I'm okay with telling you guys my age. But I'm sure there's a whole younger generation that just only grew up with the phones, right? You only experience cyberbullying. This is why we need to start teaching media literacy at a very young age, and especially if social media isn't going anywhere. Like, this is probably what we need to start teaching our kids in like elementary school or something. I don't know. Middle school. This is just getting ridiculous. Oh, I know. English is supposed to be a form of media literacy, but nobody can read. Yay. Great. We're doomed. And honestly, it started to get a little real. I started to really, really, really focus on whether they were messing with my data or not for a couple of reasons. There was one video that I was like, okay. She revealed herself that she worked in tech and in regulations, right? So I was like, all right, I'll block her. And then I saw more videos that were just related to my content. And I was like, damn, girl, if you need help with content, just reach out to me. Don't be afraid. That's how it's all about collaboration. And then And then I really started, really, really started to pay attention. Well, I mean, I can say because she confessed to it. In one of her videos, she confessed that she used to be an alcoholic and that she was sober. And I thought that was really weird because, well, the day before I actually signed up to a study to help with this issue because, I don't know, over the summer I realized, maybe I shouldn't be drinking. Yeah, the study was through UW, and I saw it on Instagram, so I signed on. I was like, okay, I just got into a little, I just went off on a friend and I was drinking, and I don't want to do that anymore. So let me see what's up. It was a bad week, and honestly, I'm learning that I can only do wine. So yeah, I don't know, I thought that was weird. And then it started to get even weirder when I would go to coffee shops, start filming it. I don't know, I had a little series, little ideas, and then it just, they would do it or talk about it. And I was like, okay, am I losing my mind? But that's not fair because I already lost my mind for things like this before. And I know that they know that because I know they have had to go through my comic book Instagram where I'm talking about these things as well. So yeah, they knew. They knew what they were doing. That's why you guys can say, oh, you're just hating on someone who's trying to talk about it. No. I'm in the community that they say that they care. I'm gonna tell you right now. That was bullshit. When Rodney King started drinking again, he mentioned he felt like all of the riots in LA were because of him and that everything was his fault. I don't like inserting myself into stories. Trust me, I know that I'm not supposed to be doing this shit as a journalist. But his footage was just tech being on our side because there was literally proof
of police brutality. And unfortunately, this also divided the Latino communities and our relationship. Like, it just divided us. Like, whenever a Latino business would, call the cops because of a break-in or something during the riots, they would call INS, which at the time was ICE. Remember, guys, ICE came before 9/11. Yeah, parents didn't want their kids around their black friends because they didn't want to be target of INS. Why am I bringing this up? Well, I was raised in the valley not far from where the incident happened. I'd say that me and my friends were the original Powerpuff Gang. And then I moved to the suburbs because my stepdad would worry that we would land in gangs. And honestly, if I'm being real honest with you, Latinas have never been the biggest fan of me. It's okay. I also want to kick my ass sometimes. That's why I say I'm from the valley. The only thing that benefited me from moving to the suburbs was that I got to go to school for the arts. That was truly my only benefit. But even then, like, kind of the identity crisis and changing just for survival. But the city that they moved me to, actually, it was for the Rodney King trial. And no, I was not alive during the 92 riots, but I grew up in the area of the aftermath, which is why I think coming to Seattle has just been a culture shock. Because, yeah, in the suburbs, I did deal with racism and microaggressions, but here it just feels very different. Back home, a white person acts silly, the community has learned to jump in and protect each other. Here, Latinos are afraid to speak up, or they don't acknowledge their internal racism or their racism. So when I was at the meeting where they talked about white supremacy, I actually learned that it was really hard, or that it could be hard, for cops to leave or report on white supremacy activities. He was able to go undercover because he fit the look. But these groups are sneaky and they're always hiding. I also learned my country. I also learned my county where I was located. Sorry. I also learned that my county where I'm located right now is one of the top rated for these groups. So yeah, I've been avoiding certain events and spaces for that reason. So it's funny to see that content creator shake fake news because now is not the time for that. But I wasn't surprised either. I mean, look at you. One of the reasons that I believe that the content creation is booming here amongst the Latinos, and why it's going to get competitive and probably very ugly, is because of Univision. God, Univision. They got rid of all their Spanish language news stations here, and now Latino businesses don't have a place for ads. And Latinos have historically always dealt with fake news around times like this, and that's what keeps us fighting. You guys can be a content creator, and you guys can share news or whatever, but it really does not hurt to just go to school. and just get a little training. You don't even have to go to a 4-year school. They do have little like media certificates you can get. Like just a little extra training does not it does not hurt anybody, you know? And here's the thing is like I'm an artist and I still need classes. You know, I'm a journalist and I still need to relook at my laws and ethics and everything. Like, I still make mistakes. So that is why I'm telling you it's important that, especially if you're going to be reporting news online, that you actually get some training so you are aware, so you don't fall for media manipulation. So you are aware when somebody is messing with you, the way I was able to tell that those girls and that influencer content creator dude, who, by the way, you girls do know that the reason you guys like him is just because he's a dude, right? And like, I'm so sorry, but his girlfriend was just like praising him over the most basic fucking shit. Or at least he's actually doing something and putting on events for the community. That is so basic. Okay, so you just want to labor off my fucking work? That's what you guys were doing the entire time. I was doing all the fucking work. You guys were laboring off of it. Sorry. Now, all summer, while you guys were preaching community, kicking those out of the community, my friend's mom got deported. And it happened right after I landed from LA. And she told me about it. And I went into shock because I didn't think Uncle Sam would hit me so close to home. God, man. Sorry, I originally interviewed her at the beginning of the summer, but then I couldn't edit because it brought back a lot of personal drama that I dealt with, including cybersecurity and data breach for the past 4 years. Then I thought I saved both of my last recorded episodes, which, by the way, both involved DACA and marriage and citizenship. But then when I tried to go look for them so I can edit them, they were gone. And then I thought maybe I just didn't save them, but honestly, this wouldn't be the first time that my work goes missing. And then, you know, I thought I saved them on Zoom, but I couldn't afford it anymore because I couldn't afford any more subscriptions or my phone bill. Honestly, it was kind of nice to not have phone service for a little bit. I got to go back to my MapQuest days and just kind of actually enjoy nature. That was nice. But yeah, I don't know. I guess this experience, I learned a lot. We love supply chain hacking, huh? So if you guys are wondering why I have so many trust issues, that's the thing too, is before you hear my next story, whatever your thoughts are on illegal, not illegal, I'm sorry, I hate using the word illegal because we're not going to be using that word, okay? It's not. It's just not. And I believe that word even came out just accidentally right now because I've never, I don't think I've ever actually we said that undocumented. Yeah, whatever your thoughts are on immigration right now, I will do what one of my English teachers said, you know, when we had a debate on guns. The way that she assigned to us our assignment was, if you are pro-gun, you have to write against it, and if you are against guns, you have to write for it. And I think that was beautiful because I was actually able to learn about this and why it was such a big issue, right? And so, the same way that those pro guns feel about their guns is the same way I feel about my freedom of speech. You talk to any media communications journalist major in our freedom of speech, right? And it's like, damn, we don't even have to agree with you, but at the end of the day, like, that is your right, right? I couldn't really even finish listening to my own episode. And it took me forever to even just get started because of all the anxiety and just having to relive both of our traumas. So yeah, I didn't I had interviewed her once, and like I said, the it got deleted, or it just where it file was missing now. And I feel like maybe the first time I interviewed her, I think I did ask better questions, and I feel like maybe the interview was a little better. I think this time you can tell that I inserted myself in the story. Two, I'm not asking like follow-up questions or questions right away. Like I know there's that one point where I just go, oh. And it's because I know the question I want to ask her, but because we had already talked about it in my last episode, and I knew that she didn't really want to talk about that specific situation, I was trying to figure out like how to ask her that without actually asking her that. So, but then I was like under pressure too, because that's what happens when you are constantly being surveillance. Or constantly being watched. Your boss, Uncle Sam, is constantly watching over your shoulders. You know, am I saying the right thing? Am I saying the wrong thing? Like, am I gonna get in trouble for this? Am I not? Like, so I'm still learning. But yeah, I think. You know, I'll probably get a lot of things in the future about how, oh, she acts, talks like she's not a lot around a lot of black folks and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you know, have you guys ever talked to any person of color who comes out of the suburbs? Because they call us suburban hood rats for a reason. I just, therapy is not fun. Therapy is not fun. So don't let anybody online make it seem like a girl going to therapy is the funnest, cutest thing in the world, okay? But let me know if you guys need any help in the future. Just kidding. I'm so over this. I hope you guys understand that if they can do this to us, actually, they already are doing this to us. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it alone. I have a hard time asking for help, but that's the thing that comes with trauma. Okay, you ask for help and nobody gives it to you. You learn to just do it alone and not ask. And it's so funny, the bystander effect, it applies online too, because God, you guys watch these people drown and you do nothing. You don't even offer the help. You know this person needs it. Oh, okay. Okay, clearly she needs help and she's doing this, but I'm gonna wait for her to reach out to me because I have all the numbers in the world. That is not, I'm gonna tell you right now, that is not how the industry works. But you guys have fun. Enjoy your clubs, your events. I'm gonna be staying home for my safety, which I think is also really funny because when all the raids started happening, the undocumented immigrants were having their parties at garages. They were not going out. They were afraid to go out. And meanwhile, you guys were like, come out here, come out here. You know? And don't even get me started with that one bouncer account because honestly, that is what I'm the most afraid of. Remember when I said that they hide anywhere? And I just didn't like hearing about shootings close to people that I was following, or just any more shootings. I'm just gonna post this. I can't even. I'm not. I can't edit this. I can't edit this. It's too much. So, I'm just gonna post this, and I know you guys can tell me I'm a terrible journalist. She didn't even ask the right question. And that's fine. If you guys have more questions, feel free to just ask them. And I will reach out to her and we can, you know, answer them. I also do want to interview her mom, and they said that they're feeling ready. So yeah. I'm sorry, this is just not going to be the best edited, well-produced episode. All right, I'm just going to do it.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing well. Give me 1 second, because my friend literally just called me, and I was like trying to tell her that I can't answer the phone right now. So let me put this on do not disturb. Okay. Erica, hi. Real quick, I just want to make sure I am recording. Does it say recording on your end? Yes.
Yes, this meeting is, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Let me just start off. Okay. Erica, I just want to say I am sorry for losing that file.
No, it's all good.
It happens to the best journalist. But in my defense, I don't know why I thought Zoom Cloud was going to be like the same as Apple Cloud, where it was just going to be there forever. It turns out it does not. So lesson learned. But thank you again so much for, you know, just taking your time to share your story and speak with me again. Yeah. I will introduce you properly in a second. There's just like a lot going on, so maybe in a way I guess it's better that we speak now. Yeah. Just to kind of see how your summer went. And so you know, I have here Erica Perez.
Yeah.
And Erica, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Want to start out, like, tell us what you do, and then we will go into how your summer, how you're doing, and everything.
Yeah. My name is Erica Perez. I lived in Ventura County, specifically in TO, all my life since I was born. Career-wise, I am a first responder in Fresno County. I have two siblings, Eric and Amy. And yeah, that's about it.
Okay, Erica. So you said TO. So just for the people who don't know where TO is Thousand Oaks. Thousand Oaks, California, in Ventura County. Thousand Oaks is primarily white, right? I think we can both agree on that. But before we get even into that, Erica, how are you doing?
Give me one moment. I'm going to...
Yeah.
Let me go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was my dog crying for me?
Oh, it happens. We're all about to start crying, so I get it.
You said how I'm feeling right now?
Yeah, how are you doing? Like, how are you doing?
I think I'm doing okay. I've been in a little like depressed, but slowly I've been trying to find myself back to my routine, getting myself just occupied, going to the gym when I can, just focusing on my health and mental health.
Yeah.
Erica, how are you really, really doing?
I
Are you really doing?
am devastated. I am really devastated.
Yeah.
I am still completely in shock that my mom is no longer here.
Yes.
I have to keep it. I have to be okay for both of my siblings because, especially my sister, she is struggling. She cries the most every night. And I
Yeah.
have to, as the oldest, keep it together for them.
Yeah. Why don't you sorry, I'm gonna start tearing up too. Why don't you tell us, okay, like oof, okay, this is harder. Okay, Erica, I'm gonna be real honest with you. This story was a little hard for me to even like edit originally the first time, because and it's like not even you. It's like, and I feel bad even saying this because it's more like you were literally going through it. Like your mom got deported, right? Like I have my mom here. I have my mom here with me, right? And so I understand that like this situation is much, much heavier probably for you than it is for me. I'm taking it like a little, I don't know. I'm seeing it from like, I guess, the outsider perspective right now because I'm not even in California. And so a lot of the things that I have to be seeing is through online. And you know, and we will get into it a little bit, hopefully. But we talk about surveillance, and we, you know, how immigration is kind of, or the administration is kind of dealing with things right now. And it was a little triggering to me personally. I know I just said the word trigger, ugh, but the reality is because I had. There was a video that came out in the middle of the summer, in the middle of me actually trying to like edit the first interview I had with you. And it was a video of the detainees inside the detention center, and they were just like walking kind of like around, and they kind of looked like zombies. It was kind of very sad. I don't know if you saw that video, but it reminded me of, I don't even know if I should share this, of the time when I was like hospitalized, and just kind of saw like the insides of it. And of course, I've never been in a detention like center, so I'm sure that's nothing like it was when you are, you know, being hospitalized. But you know, the way people are kind of walking around like that, and like the surveillance, the feelings, the everything, it kind of it brought me back to when I was in those places. So it was really hard for me, and then I felt really bad because I was like, maybe I should not be a journalist. Like maybe I really should, like this is not what I should be doing. If I can't even like finish editing. Or not editing, but even finish the story, right? And I think that's why it took me a much longer to produce the episode because it is traumatic. Like what we're going through, what you're going through, is trauma. So why don't you? I'll explain how I know Erica. So I met Erica when I was working as an assistant manager at a movie theater. There was Latinas that worked at the movie theater, but we were just like one of like the few. Like you could tell, like you can still tell that it's very, very, very white. And I'm gonna be real honest with you, like us Latinas, we were one of the hardest worker ones there. Like let's be real, you know. And Erica was one of them. She was like an amazing employee, and you know, that's why like I'm not surprised to see that like she is, you know, working in the fire department and doing all these great things because Erica has never backed down. She's never like you tell her, like I always say, like she reminds me of, is it Hoppy, or is it like is her name Hoppy from Zootopia, like the little bunny?
Hop or something like
Hop,
that.
yeah. She
The
like I
rabbit,
don't yeah.
yeah.
Like you kind of remind me of like you have like her like you know because people would be like no like you can't do this and you'd be like I'm gonna do it anyways you know and I
Yeah.
love that like I love that a lot about you and like it's like people like you that really just continue to push me going you know keep going so why don't you share with us the night like the night that you your mom was getting deported like tell us
Yeah.
everything leading up to that day tell us that day and then what happened afterwards
So it all happened on June 4th, 2025. I went with my mom to her routine check-in in Camarillo, in California, and when she had all her paperwork, she had all her she was already put on a what's called a watch monitor, and so she had to basically every Monday use that watch and like take a picture of herself that she was wearing it. Had to do routine checks on, I believe, Wednesdays. She had to get out of work and not and go check in. There's like a check-in place besides the Camarillo, which is 321 Cortez Circle. That's where we were originally going, and then they moved her to I don't know if you know where Waypoint Cafe is in Camarillo. It's like the airport. It's where they do the where they do like the fire academy for Ventura and the sheriff's academy. So
It's not in front of El Consulado, right?
no, it's
Okay.
like in that area where there's like a I want to say there's like a school there. I think it's where like kids go when they misbehave.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so there's like a little corner, and that's where she was doing her a weekly routine checks there. And they ask you a bunch of questions, basically like how many people live in that house, how like they ask her personal questions that I thought it was weird. They don't even let me go inside to translate. A lot of those people that are in that facility are all Latinos.
Do they have a translator?
Yeah, they all speak Spanish. All
Yeah, but do they have somebody translating when they're like speaking with, oh, like you're saying like the people doing the
Yeah, the
interviews aren't
people
speaking
translate.
Spanish.
Yeah,
Okay.
they don't even need me. They just they translate everything, but they're
Okay,
all
okay.
Latinos.
Okay.
I would just go there with my mom, and they would tell me, you know, you get to wait. You have to wait outside. Coming
Okay.
fast forward June 4th, we got a call saying, hey, you need to go check in at 321 Cortez Circle, with your mom. So we were like, okay, you know. That was weird because we were told maybe we didn't have to do that for a while. We go in, we were one of the first people to go in. And basically, the ICE officer tells me, hey, your mom's getting deported today. Your mom has exceeded her time being here in the US. And there's nothing else that you can do. And basically, say goodbye to your mom. And at that point, my original lawyer would not answer the phone, and so I got fed up and I called. I had a one on standby who was going to be my lawyer for now, like who was going to take over because I was just done with the first one. But it was too late because he was we were trying to get all the facts. He was trying to get the file. I was supposed to pay him, but he still towards the end he still was fighting for my mom. Hey, he talked he got on a speaker and was speaking to the ICE officer. Hey, I'm gonna like basically I need more time to look at Beria's file. Is there a way we could can we postpone this for a week? You know. He basically, ICE officer was like, nope, we can't do that. I will get in trouble by higher up. She needs to be deported today. And then I guess lawyer was like, let me speak to your supervisor. And I guess they took the phone to the supervisor. I wasn't there exactly. I don't know what conversation they had. But by that time, officer said, hey, you gotta leave. Your mom's gonna get handcuffed and put in the jail cell. They didn't even let my sister say goodbye. She had to say goodbye through the phone. I just saw my mom tear up. I can never forget her face. The way my mom was crying. My mom obviously had mental health issues, depression, and suicidal. And so just seeing my mom, how she was, I was so scared my mom would take her life. I will never forget.
Sorry, may I ask? Sorry, no, continue. You said you would never forget.
I will never forget the tears coming down my mom. She was talking to my brother on the phone saying goodbye because my brother was at UC Santa Barbara, and she told my brother to promise her that he would graduate and to make her proud. I said goodbye to my mom, and as I'm walking by, I see in a like the corner of my eye, a mother and a daughter, and I can see in their eye because they had just like were speaking to my mom when my mom was checking in. They were like having a conversation. I can see the terror in that little girl. I can see the terror in that mother. I was crying. They knew. I think that deep down they knew my mom wasn't gonna come out. I walk out of the office and I am crying. And there's so many people coming in for their check-ins, and they just see me bawl. I could not stop crying. I just fell on my knees, and I just wanted to tell them to not come in, like leave. Like I wish I could tell them that, and I just can't. I couldn't. But deep down, like I could see everyone who was checking in just like scared, and like what was happening. Like I think deep down, everybody like knew what was happening. I just ended up going towards my sister and hugging her because she was crying hysterically. I'd wipe my tears after, and I just like started to grab her because I needed to be the stronger person. And then we just end up going home, and that's when I spoke to the lawyer that basically there was pretty much nothing he can do no more because ICE was not letting him file anything at all.
How often were you guys going to the deportation meetings?
Check-in. We've
Check-ins,
been
yeah.
going since I believe 2012 because that was the first deportation that happened was for my dad. And how that happened was parents were filing for papers to get a work permit, and unfortunately they got scammed by a lawyer who pretended to be an immigration lawyer, and he was turned out in a notary, and he scammed so many people that he was in jail for it. By the time that my parents tried to go see him, he was in jail to tell, look, they wanted to go see him because to let him know that he made a mistake. Like, why did you put us for political asylum when Mexicans don't get political asylum? And my parents were panicking. They had to show up to court. They had a letter that came through, and they were scrambling around finding a lawyer, and they showed up to court and found a random lawyer that was walking around that was supposedly immigration lawyer, and they go face a judge, and the judge says, basically like you're gonna have to self-deport. Lawyer didn't even say anything to fight for my parents. He just stood quiet. There was a point where my mom tried to like speak to let the lawyer know, hey, like we've been here for this long, but the judge kind of like told her, shut up, like basically shut up. You're not supposed to talk at all. And my mom stood quiet. And I have those recordings because I have the tapes. I was able to get the entire file of how everything happened from my attorney. So I'm able to hear all those recordings. And eventually, I believe 2011 was the time I was trying to apply for a university, arts institute. I was trying to go for graphic design, and I my you're supposed to apply for financial aid. Dad put his I guess believe his information, and I think the day right after we came for, I think it was a Saturday, and Sunday was the day he got deported with, and they came right after ICE knocking on the door, and we found it weird. I opened the door. I was basically a senior in high school. I didn't know about my parents' status at the time. I opened the door, and I didn't know it was ICE. I thought there were cops. They were like, "Hey, we're looking for this person. Do you happen to know who this is?" And I was like, "No, I don't know this person at all." Like, I was like, "Can we come in and ask you a few questions?" Mom was right behind me, and they come in and they were like, "Hey, we're ICE. We came here for both of you. We came here for your mom and dad, but we're just gonna take your dad, and your mom has gonna have to do a check-in with immigration, and she needs to get an attorney. So she will be staying with you guys." They walked in my dad in the room where my parents were sleeping. Told them to put some clothes on, handcuffed him. They let both of my siblings there. They went inside my room as well just to see if there was anybody else. But they went inside my room where me and my siblings were staying at, and they were sleeping, so they didn't know until after. But yeah, we had to explain to my siblings later on. My brother was, I believe, in preschool, and my sister was in elementary. I want to say fourth or fifth grade.
So you didn't grow up knowing that your parents were undocumented,
No, I didn't
right?
know anything.
Did they ever talk to you about the just about being undocumented, like in general, like not maybe even themselves? Did they ever just talk to you about like, hey, there's undocumented people and then there's documented people? Did they
Yeah,
ever have the conversation?
no, I
No.
never had a conversation with me until I learned that day who would what ICE was. I learned about their status. And ever since then, I blame myself for opening that door, and I did not know my rights. Because if I would have kept that door open closed, maybe that wouldn't have happened, and my parents would still be here, in hiding. Maybe eventually we could have found a lawyer that could have helped us taking that deportation off of them. But that was the hardest part, taking that deportation off. And it wasn't like they did anything wrong. They got scammed. And it happens to a lot
It
of
happens to a
people.
lot. Yeah. No, that's a very, very common, unfortunately. And I don't think that you should blame yourself, especially when you simply did not know. And obviously it's not your parents' fault either, because this is like, you never know why, parents talk and don't talk about certain things. But I mean, I always knew growing up just because I crossed the border. But I understand every Latino household is very, very different. And so, what was kind of like, okay, so I guess what was your experience growing up in Thousand Oaks like then, up until that knowledge, up until you had that knowledge of that your parents had an a different status. Like, what was your life growing up in Thousand Oaks like?
Especially at schools, I kind of like faced a little bit of racism because I wasn't white. Got bullied a lot.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, maybe because there was a point where I was always in ELD. I spoke Spanish and English. And I guess, and yeah, you know, I guess my mom wrote in that piece of paper, "Oh, first language is Spanish," so they put me in there because both my parents at the time weren't really fluent in English, and so I got put in that all the time. And I was one of the kids that would go into that, while I saw others didn't go through that. It was kind of hard to even get out of that ELD program. Like, no matter how much I like, hey, I know I can speak it really well. Why do I need to take a test all the time, you know?
Yeah, I think the only way I got out of it was because my high school like didn't have, or they had it but they didn't have it, and it's weird. But no, that's interesting. So
Then
did you know anything about, sorry, continue.
in middle school, same races, like, some teachers, you can tell they were kind of a racist. And in high school as well, I played in the for Westlake High School varsity soccer team. I was the only Latina in there.
Hey,
You know.
that's our sport, so like of course, like no, I and what about the, like, just I guess, did you know much about the immigration experience, like besides,
I didn't know anything.
no,
And
did you know
so,
any other people like who were undocumented or
no,
anything?
I did know, because I was in, like, sometimes in the low standard like classes. So I did know a lot of Latinos who only spoke Spanish, like no English at all, but they would put into that class and I was put with them. But I was like the one that knew more English. So that so it was funny, but I'm friends with all those people, still keep in touch, and I know a lot of those people are now, they are undocumented, you know, and then they message me all the time, like, hey, like, I'm really glad you're fighting for everybody, like, your story is so motivating. They always message me, I hope you're doing okay. You know, I know them, and so, yeah.
What was I gonna say? Okay, so where was I? Okay, well, so you mentioned that you're okay, so I just want to clarify something because I think last time I didn't think I clarified. But you, so your dad is now also in Mexico, right? Okay. And so now you're, both of your parents are reunited. Okay, great. Okay. I mean, great but not great, you know what I mean?
I don't want to talk too much about my dad because he doesn't want to be in the spotlight.
Yes, that's fair.
He asked me to keep that private,
Yes.
but just to mention, like, what happened. But my mother doesn't care no more. Like,
Yes, that's fair.
yeah.
No, that's totally fine. That's totally fine. Okay, and so then you applied for financial aid. They came, grabbed your father. Why did they let your mom stay?
I think during the Obama administration, what I was looking into, he was allowing one parent to stay. And
Okay.
so instead of us going, because if they would have taken both parents, I think that we would have probably ended up in a foster home. At the time, I did have my tia, my mom's sister, who is a US citizen, but she passed away right after my mom kind of recovered from her surgeries, because my mom was. During that time that my dad got deported, my mom was having surgeries for breasts. She got her breast removed. She had many surgeries, to the point where she was in the hospital for a couple of months, and I was the one keeping the house together, preparing lunches, taking my siblings to school. I was basically kind of like the mom. while my mom was recovering in the hospital. And there was times I couldn't see her because I didn't even have a driver's license. I had to like get someone to take me to school, and then to my I would just get a ride to my sibling's school, which was Konoha Elementary, and then I would walk to Westlake High School. But there were times where I didn't even make it to school because I was so depressed. And I would always like walk to Barnes and Nobles and fall asleep because how exhausted I was
Everything.
from everything.
Yeah.
I almost didn't graduate, but I guess like we were able to convince the school about everything that was going on with me.
Yeah. No, I think that's so important because that. So that was the other thing. May I ask what your mom did here in the United States when she was
Yes.
here?
Yeah, so she worked as like a janitor custodian. She worked
Okay.
at a Woodland Hills at a apartment complex, and she was like the lead in a job. Yeah.
And then I asked because my mom's a custodian, she's a janitor. And my mom too, she's great, and she's like one of like would also be considered like a lead and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When it comes to medical stuff, it can get pretty tough. So how was that like growing up and you're dealing with the medical issues that your mom's going through, you're dealing with trying to go to school. Which is already it's a struggle. Like going to school when you are Latino, like trying to finish high school, it is generally a struggle. Like I know people sometimes are thinking, oh, it's just so easy, just do it. But no, we have things like Erica, like there are things going on where we have to step up. And I'm sorry, but I do not have time to fix a freaking math formula problem. I gotta figure out how to get these bills paid, you know? So I get it. But how did that affect you, like personally? Like was there any did you guys struggle a lot with the healthcare system, especially with your mom being undocumented or
We didn't struggle with the healthcare system. It was basically paying the bills because they were piling up, to the point where we end up lose we lost our apartment. We had to leave, and we had to we got a little room with my tia, and we were renting there, and it was just all basically my mom, yeah, all four of us living in one room. It was really hard. We had like we applied for some churches to help us pay for those bills. I remember my mom applying for I believe like we would go to food banks. People would donate to us at the time. And there was a point where the community got together and knew my mom's situation at the school, and they got together and they donated a certain amount of money to help us at the time. So it's not the first time the community has helped us. That's the second time. It's
yeah.
time now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's we'll kind of lead into it. So, I guess how do I start the community section? I guess with community, with everything going on, how have you seen the community show up? What does community like even mean to you? How has this kind of like changed, I guess, like
Yeah, it's
your
a lot
perspective?
different compared to the first time. The second time, obviously, I went all out. I think the reason was because the mistreatment that my mom faced at the LA Detention Center with all those females, and I got a hold of VC Defensa, and I had done my research before my mom was gonna get deported. I started to look into like PSL Los Angeles, like I started looking, and I found later on VC Defensa was a group of community members who are willing to fight for the immigrant community, and you know they're all great people. I think the we've expanded. I believe I don't know if it's 500 to 700 people. I might be wrong, but I think it's 500. that we have volunteers who are just trying to help the immigrant community and making outreach, informing them about their rights, like not to open doors, like make sure you don't sign anything,
Erica, may I ask what made you decide to like speak out publicly about your mom's story?
It was mainly because I received a phone call from my mother, and she was. I can hear on the line that there was other women crying, and my mom tells me, "You promised me if I leave that you're gonna help people in my status, help them be heard." And I said, "Yeah, I promise." And then on the she hands the phone to a couple girls, and they give me the address to where they're located, which is the federal building in LA. And they basically said they haven't been fed for 14 hours. There's people, the women are pleading, banging on the doors to be fed. There was an incident where, they would just like start, these girls would start hallucinating that they were like, they were so hungry, they started to hallucinate they were eating a proper meal. Like they would say, "Oh, I'm drinking this Starbucks," like just to escape the nightmare at the moment that they were facing. And then my mom told me that they would crawl under the benches and would start to cry. Like they weren't given basic necessities, no menstrual products. Like my mom told me about the woman who was like forced to sit in her own blood. Like,
Like,
and then wasn't given what I was told. My mom told me was that later on she was told that one of the ICE officers grabbed like a boxer and just threw it at her to use that as for her blood. Like
oof.
it was insane the things my
Yeah.
mom would tell me. And my mom was diabetic, so she had her medication. But they, when she would have to take her medication, they would just like throw it in her mouth, and she had to open her mouth to making sure that she took her medication. Like they were like, it was cold in that building. My mom calls it the, like the, what did she say? The freezer, because that's how cold it was. And I remember my mom said that she asked for a sweater. And the ICE officer was like, "Oh, we'll see if we have anything because we're running out." And then later, hours would pass by and nothing. Eventually, he like handed her a pair of pants. He's like, "Use." He like threw it at her and said, "Use that as a sweater for now." And my mom would just put in her hand in there and like sit down with all the girls. And there's people that didn't even get a pair of pants to as a sweater. There's. It was crazy in there.
Yeah. Oh God, you were just giving me like a little bit of flashbacks of like me inside the hospital, because I think it's not like, I mean, not like that, and I don't want to compare it to that, but it's just the way that people can look at you when you are in a like not in a good spot and they have authority over you. You know what I mean? It's like that, like in a way that like they're almost laughing, you know? Oh, okay. This is not my story. This is not my story. Okay, I'm sorry.
And instead of me, I got mad. I was crying. I wiped my tears up and I got so mad. And I was like, "Is this how we fucking treat people? Women, men, is like they're human beings. Like they're just seeking for safety, for dignity, and for a chance to live." And the fact that they treated my mother and all those women like that, if it boiled my blood. I just like I could not like there's something like you can mistreat me, you can do anything to me, like talk bad about me, but my mother, that is the line where I crossed. And I got mad and I fucking made contact with BC Defensa. I sent them the the recording where my mom says everything that's going on there, I went all in. I was like, this is not just my mother's story, but those girls deserve justice.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm gonna ask a couple questions now, and I'm not trying to go like
Oh, ask all the questions you
yeah,
want.
this is me more like I have to remind myself that I gotta be hard on everybody, not just everybody, right? But not so what did you prior to this? Prior to your mom getting deported, had you gone to any protests before? How were you kind of like speaking up?
My first protest was in LA when they did when PSL Los Angeles and BC Defensa got together, and when they got the recording, they passed it down to their comrades, and that's when they made the first rally. I don't remember exactly the date, what date it was the rally. Let me see. I probably have it somewhere right here. I think the first rally
The
was,
six, right?
yeah, June 6th. That was the first rally I went to, where it was a lot of media. I didn't even know I was gonna do a speech. I was so caught off guard, and I was like too emotional. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what was the right thing to say. Like till this day, I'm so scared of saying the wrong thing and just it biting me in the ass. But
Yeah,
how
did you get
people will
any? Sorry, continue.
I just didn't know how people would think about me, like my department. Like it was like everybody was going to know.
Yeah.
And at this point, I think at that point, I was just like, I didn't care. It was my mother's story, and I was like, I gotta go all in. I wasn't prepared for that speech when I did it that day.
Did they just kind of throw you into it? Did
Yeah,
they
they
tell
threw
you
me
you
into
were
it.
yeah.
Yeah, they threw me into it. I had no, not that I didn't have a choice, but I had to. I didn't have anything written down, and I was emotional. I was a lot of emotions that day, but I was so happy to see a bunch of people like get together, and just like protest. Or we did like a whole like round around the or a walk around the whole building, and like I was taken care of. So just if something happened, I believe that during that there was an encounter with ICE and some protesters, and I started that. They started throwing stuff at them, and it got a little too rowdy right after. I believe that that's the night that it all blew up. And from what I remember, that was the that rally.
Yeah.
My mom was what blew everything up.
Hey, so you know what? We need that sometimes, like
And I couldn't even get to my car. I had I had like a cousin, and she parked like right next to the federal building, and she couldn't. We were walking for hours. Cops were telling us, "Go another way, find your own way. We don't care." Like
yeah.
they were just assholes to us. And eventually, we found her car, and she was able to go home. But it was crazy. Like people were having a hard time getting to their cars.
Yeah, so tell what's kind of the process like when it comes to like on your side of the media. So you reached out, people you got to the protests. Did they already have like I know you said you got th kind of thrown into speaking to the making a speech, but oh my God, how do I word this question? did they like
There
okay,
was
kind of just process, yeah, like explain it to us, like
media outlets just trying to reach to me, like, "Hey, can I have your number so we can talk later?" Because they were just focused on what was the whole rally
around,
was going on.
yes.
So eventually, there was a couple that that reached out. Jacob, what's his name? I think you might know him. He did recently. I can't say his name.
Is he with KTLA or
He's
NBC?
now with Jacob Smornoff. Jacob
Oof.
Smornoff, an American journalist. Yeah. He reached out, but
Okay.
got to do the interview. Somehow, they were trying to interview me right away. And I was still grieving. I was trying to get things together. My get my mom situated in TJ because she was already in TJ by that the very after the fourth. So the fifth she arrived to TJ. So they want a lot of them just wanted interviews right away. And I was so busy. I couldn't keep up with everything. I did couple with some and I was some of them were cool and like, yes, this day was fine or this time they would go on my schedule and which was kind of cool. I really appreciate that. And then some would reach out to VC Defensa and hey, like they want to interview me. So I would say yes or no. Most of the time I said yes and just told my story.
Was there anyone from like the right side also wanted to speak to you, or was everybody kind of like on the neutral side? Like, I don't
I
know,
don't
journalism
know
is so
who I
weird.
don't know who the left or right side is. Like
Okay, these days, yeah,
I didn't
same.
know who like what media is, I'm assuming they're
Yeah, I mean,
everybody watches the news.
they're supposed to be, there's like five, right? But then we know that it really, because I guess what I'm trying to say is, okay, that was, I almost forgot the question. When the media started like just come to you and like ask you questions, or ask for you for an interview. Because that's something I kind of even like struggle with. Because I understand, like, okay, this person just went through something traumatic, and now you want me to go and like talk to them right now. Like, they're grieving. I understand that, like, from my point of view, it's like I need to get this story out, right? And I need to get it shared out to the public, but I'm also a human. And so, how does it like, how can we do better with that kind of like situation when we're you're go when someone's going through something like that? Obviously, we want the story, we want to know because we need to share it, but we also, I also want to, have empathy for that person because I also understand, like, okay, I'm going to make you relive this traumatic experience real quick. So in a way, like, what can we do? I guess, like, I don't really.
I mean, a lot of them really just would text me or call me. I responded mostly to texts, and they were really cool about it. Hey, like I would just say, is this time and date okay? And then they would say yes or no. But I know a lot of them have a time crunch. They want to throw their story out, but there's some that I couldn't do, like with that one journalist. I know he's really big, and I just couldn't do it with him. I had reached out to him later on, but I wasn't going to push it if they didn't read the
Was
story.
it just
And
scheduling or just like you
it
just
was just the
didn't?
scheduling,
Okay.
you know. And
And
by the time he
then.
wanted to schedule me, I was already planning my trip to TJ to get my mom her things, and it just didn't work out. And yeah.
And then how, okay, now that this, and then the stories went out, how do you think the media portrayed your stories? Like, it's like.
It was mixed. I think that there, especially because I saw a lot of the comments. I try not to look at the comments. Yeah, a lot of the comments were really brutal, but like she was here for 35 years. How did she not get her green card? And it was just like I would just to my mind, instead of me getting like upset, I was just like, oh my God, like you can tell that people are not educated and don't know that it's not that easy to get a green card, even if you're here for 35 years. Like they say, do it the right way. There's really no right way. I believe the only right way, the way people have gotten green cards, it's like there's some certain programs, like if you're married to a US citizen or that one,
Like work visas, like
like
HB
a
or
HB, yeah, there's like
yeah.
certain
Yeah, there's a lot of
specific
visas that you
criteria
have to
you have to meet.
qualify.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you have to
Dude,
qualify.
when I learned that there's like a genius, I don't even know, maybe I should go back and make sure that that's a good one. But when I learned that, it was like, yo, you're really smart, you can be in the country. I was like, I'm not, but just kidding.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed the chisme, share it, send it to a friend, post it online, or just talk about it with someone. However you spread it, I appreciate it. And if you want updates, behind the scenes chisme, or to stay in the loop, keep an eye out for my email newsletter. Follow or subscribe for more episodes of La Chismosa del Valle. Catch you next time.